Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man, a madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men
and
talk about it.
I'm trying to anticipate so that like with the lag of the Zoom that they're like all synced up like our periods.
No, I knew that what you do, I know what you do, and I wanted to drag
you
that
know
one
my
out.
Body.
I know your body. We know each other's bodies so well. We've seen them. We've rubbed them. You've got a great body.
Aw, so I just do you.
Now you're lying to me, and that's fine. But it's like you work out. Anyways, give us 5 stars in a review wherever you get your podcast. Let people know that you love this show. Also, join our Patreon, patreon.com/frogcast. You get these episodes a week early. You also get a bonus episode. You get the Frogcast, where we talk about other things.
It's like 2 or 3 different podcasts for the price of one or less than one.
I know. It's kind of amazing that more of you aren't doing it.
Yeah.
You sons of bitches. So, you know, when we have Patreon piggies, they eat good. They eat really good. And they leave comments that are sometimes a little bit inappropriate. Here's one commenter from Patreon. He said,
"Now that you fed me, why don't we go upstairs?"
Yeah. He, you know, we fed him his content slop and he wanted to fuck us, which is very rude because we're related to him. That is a clip from this episode. This is Ira Glass. and anyways, very excited to talk about today's episode, season 2, episode 10, The Inheritance. Our guest is a returning champion. This is the, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're excited. A female is here. We love a female in moderation. The funniest. as long as there's only one and surrounded by men, that's what we love. The funniest female comic in the world, Allison Stevenson, is here.
What's up?
What's up, Allison? Oh, God. That was a fun intro to do.
Yeah, thank you for that. You added some flourish to it.
I did. I really wanted to bring us back to the days when we would go to the Brainwash Cafe together and have Tony Sparks introduce.
Oh, God. Is he still alive?
I believe he's still alive. I think
okay.
He's. Yeah.
That's good.
I don't want him to be dead. I always enjoyed him, but he did do this thing a lot where he's like, "Oh, ladies, humans, we got a female." Like it's always as if everyone had to put take their hat off.
He had an interesting way of kind of making it seem like he had a crush on every woman.
He did.
Who existed, but it wasn't like super. It wasn't like creepy.
Yeah, no. I never saw him actually like trying to fuck. And I remember thinking I would eventually. And I never
you thought things were going to come out.
It's a testament to him that he had that position and we never saw him
and didn't abuse it.
He just let me cut in line.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, who's to say if I was in the same position, I would have the strength of a Tony Sparks.
If I was the guy who ran open mic at a laundromat. Oof. Like, I mean, it'd be hard not to
abuse
that
open mic, okay? Lying down the block.
Yes.
Okay? That man had power.
We wouldn't know each other if not for that.
You know, we joke about someone abusing that power, but it is so funny, the power that does get abused in local comedy scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
much
absolutely.
Less power than that
That's
has been abused.
So funny. People go like, I got a really popular monthly if you want to come on, you might want to go out on a date with me. And it's just, that, you know, the guys like that.
And you know what?
We did.
I would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would.
I would and I did.
That's what, and you know what? And we're all the better for it. That's what I say. Allison Stevenson, what's your favorite? What's your favorite advertisement?
You know, I think because subconsciously, I didn't even realize that I was doing it when I first greeted you. But I was like, what's up?
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
That must mean it's so deeply ingrained in me that like this ad is probably the most impactful ad that's ever existed.
Yeah.
It's got to be. And it makes you wonder if it actually did like sell beer. Or if it was
it a beer commercial? I don't remember what it was for.
Yeah, Bud Light.
It was for beer.
Or Budweiser, beer? Same thing, I guess.
Yeah, interesting. Here it is right here. Here's...
Hold up, pick up good yardage on the play. You know, the best part of this defense is their defensive line and their interior.
Hello?
Linebacker.
Hey, who? What's up? Nothing, B. Just watching the game, having a bud. What's up with you?
Nothing. Watching the game, having a bud.
True. True.
What's up? What's up?
Yo, who's that?
Yo, pick up the phone.
Hello?
What's that?
What's up?
Yeah. It is crazy how popular this was.
That's like really that's good, good writing, ad. Actually. Yeah, that was really was good.
It is
good
actually ad. Really good. I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying this was a phenomenon.
I mean, you compare that to Dilly Dilly.
Oh,
doesn't
God,
hold a fucking candle.
Not even close. Fucking.
No.
To what?
Dilly Dilly? That was the latter day attempt to recreate weather.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Like barely barely a memory there.
Well, I mean, it was, as Matt Crispin is fond of saying, that back in the day, like everyone got their memes during the Super Bowl ads, and those were the memes that you had for the rest of the year.
For the whole
and
year.
So, like, so it's kind of hard to compare like in the era from when Super Bowl ads were your memes for the entire year to like, 25 years later when
true.
Just trying to make the same thing happen. It's impossible. But also those ads were shitty just objectively compared to what's up.
Didn't they bring those guys back for like some like Obama campaign or something?
Probably.
Oh my God.
There was like a commercial, I think it was for Obama, where it was like the same guys too, as if these were like people that we knew and loved all these years. And now they're back.
Oh, wait, what are you doing?
Stopping fascism, having a bud.
I found it.
The fundamentals of our economy are strong.
8 years later, it says.
Very difficult time.
And we see the same guy who was sitting on the couch before. But he's older now, and it says 2008.
Our best days are ahead of us.
Hello?
What's up, B?
Oh, my God. All right, so the other one who's calling is calling from the battlefield in Iraq. I'm serious. Holy.
Wait a minute.
Yes. Oh, my.
I don't remember that.
He's calling from an Arabic payphone that looks exactly like an American payphone, but this one's got Arabic writing on it. All right. Here we go.
None. Lost my home. Looking for a job.
God
What's
damn.
Up with you?
Still in Iraq. Watching my ass.
True. True.
Oh, all right. His friend just walked in, and he's got an arm in a cast, and he just dropped a bunch of a box full of stuff.
Yo, who's that?
Hold on for a second. Yo, pick up the phone.
Yo, forget the phone. I need painkillers. You got money for painkillers?
Just pick up the phone.
God damn.
Hello?
What's up?
What's up?
Oh, he hurt himself.
Where's Dookie?
Hey, yo, Dookie!
Our Dookie is looking at his stocks on the internet. They have gone down. Oh, he's just crying. He's not saying what's up.
Hello?
Oh, my God. This is another friend. Apparently, there is a hurricane happening outside, and he's trying to get into the apartment. This is blowing my mind.
This is so long.
I think one of them just hung himself. No. Okay. And then Barack Obama is running for president.
Change. Oh. That's what's up.
Change, that's what's
change.
Up.
Damn, dude.
That's what's up.
He nailed it.
Okay, that's my favorite commercial. I just changed it to that one.
That's fair, yeah.
Oh, you know, you got to hand it to Barack Obama, you know, for all his, you know, faults that people had with him. The motherfucker knew how to do a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he did great at that. But this is not a podcast about the What's Up campaign and its tie-in with the Barack Obama presidential campaign of 2008. No,
maybe it should be.
It probably should be. But no, instead, it is a podcast about Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot.
Guess when this episode aired?
When did it air? Oh, October.
2008 in October, probably right when that ad was airing.
Whoa.
Yo, what are the chances? We cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chose a madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Mad.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, we're talking about from season 2, episode 10 of Mad Men, The Inheritance, came out October 5th, 2008. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Certainly. Betty and Dawn visit her father, who has had a stroke, and Paul and Pete look set to go to L.A. for a rocket fair, but Paul's girlfriend Sheila wants him to go on a civil rights march. Mm. Elsewhere, Betty finds a surprise in the Wendy house, and Pete decides he doesn't like his mother.
The Wendy house?
Yeah, I guess that's the little house that they had outside.
Also, who wrote this synopsis?
I don't know, Wikipedia?
And they fucked it up. He's not... Paul's not just being asked to go on a civil rights march. He's being asked to go on a freedom ride.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a freedom ride?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
When they were like driving the buses through the South to protest Jim Crow.
And wasn't that also your mom's nickname in college?
Listen, you son of a bitch. Listen, you son of a bitch.
No, that was free to ride. Sorry.
All right. All right. But Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode is set in?
I think what you're trying to say is we cannot evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. We got to put some of that cultural context back in, which we like to do with a little segment that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
That's right. Just to give you, I mean, I have a lot of silly stories, but I'll give you like the main bit of context. We're talking about freedom rides. There's some stuff going down in Mississippi. We're going all the way back to October 5th, 1962.
Mm.
James Meredith was trying to integrate the University of Mississippi. James Meredith, en route to class, he's accompanied by U.S. Marshals at Oxford. That's the city in Mississippi. It's not the English one. Anyway,
I figured it wasn't England, Vince.
Some people don't know that. A lot of people don't know where Oxford, Mississippi is.
That's true. I didn't know.
Yeah. A Justice Department official confirmed Thursday that a convoy of 5 carloads of marshals was stopped at a roadblock by a Mississippi sheriff. He said none was arrested. At Holly Springs, Sheriff Saul Cox said he stopped the convoy after receiving an anonymous telephone call from Memphis that, quote, a group of drunken marshals were headed toward Oxford, unquote. Deputy Attorney General Nicholas Katzenbach said the convoy was permitted to continue within a short time. There had been no drinking among the men and none was arrested. Cox said...
Katzenbach?
Katzenbach and Cox. Cox said 4 of the occupants, none of whom was driving, were intoxicated, extremely arrogant, and resisting arrest. He said he took a quart of wine from one of the 4.
When the cat's in the box, it's neither alive nor dead. It's dead and alive at the same time.
So this is a little bit complicated, but basically the local sheriffs are trying to stop the U.S. Marshals from integrating.
They're doing race crimes.
They're doing, yes, and they're also like, they're sort of doing like the cry bullying thing where they're like, no, they were drunk. They were drinking a box of wine. They were very belligerent. They said rude things to my daughters.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't care that, you know, we don't mind integration, but, you know, I had heard that they was drunk the whole time, and that's not allowed in the state.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I love civil rights. 100%. No, we got an anonymous call. I mean, it wasn't a call. He came in person, but he was anonymous. He had this bed sheet on his head. I didn't even
he rallied
know
all
was.
Of his friends. I don't know why they were hanging out
yeah,
together.
Yeah, they were all wearing bed sheets.
They said they were doing
know.
Some kind of ceremony. They didn't yeah. describe what it was.
I know they love God because they had a big cross. We love God, too.
Here's another one. This is a very short story, but it caught my eye for reasons that will become clear. Dies in fall. Melton Mowbray, England. Attorney William Rollo, 72, former father-in-law of the actor David Niven, died of a broken neck Wednesday when he fell from his horse during a fox hunt. He was the father of Niven's first wife, Primula, who also died of a broken
Primula?
Neck. Primula.
Yeah.
Primula Niven. Yeah. Who also died of a broken neck 18 years ago after a fall at a Hollywood party.
These. Whoa. I assume that one wasn't horse related.
Who knows? It's what kind of
were
it's a Hollywood
necks,
party.
Were necks like weaker back then?
I mean, if you're British, yeah.
Yeah, and the Niven family apparently just weak. Weak
a lot of inbreeding or
lot
something?
A lot of inbreeding. They're yeah. just, it's like a shitty.
Oh, my neck.
Oh, my neck hurts.
Oh, again.
Oh, I'm like a purebred dog, I am. Oh, I've got hip dysplasia in my neck. That's crazy. A whole family wiped out by... tripping on the ground. Generations.
Yeah, fox hunt. I mean, I guess if you fall off the horse, that'd be bad.
I mean, people falling off a horse and breaking their neck is a thing that happens. But the daughter thing kind of makes me go, what's really going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
I've been told that I fell off a horse.
Yeah, yeah. I could
when
see
I
that.
When I was a child. Oh. I don't remember it.
Wow.
Really? So, at some point you rode a horse. So, yeah. You know, so do you remember ever riding a horse?
Yeah, but I think when this happened, I was like very young. I was maybe like 4 or 5 or something.
Too young.
I shouldn't have even been on a horse.
Yeah, too young to be on top of a horse. I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah.
And yet I was.
And yet you were. But you know what? You turned out okay for someone who died on a horse. I guess you didn't die.
Huh. Did I?
Yeah. Am I dead?
Can I sue this horse?
Yeah. Turn it to glue.
Another headline from the Miami Herald. U.S. good to hobos, Britain says. English terrible.
Wait, who says?
Britain.
Okay.
Britain says we're good to hobos?
Yeah. It's back to the good old U.S. for 45-year-old Jack Simons, a London East End product who has spent 20 years as a hobo, 12 of them in the U.S.
I gotta wonder what the definition of hobo was back then.
I think it's someone who rides the rails.
Okay. That's...
What's it short for? It's like homeless that's, something?
Ooh, that's a great
or...
question. I don't know.
Homeless.
Homeless bohemian. I don't know.
That's probably right.
That could be it. Yeah.
Jack dropped into the office for a handout and a chat about the comparative attractions of a tramp's life on the two sides of the Atlantic. Why, around Spokane or Portland or Minneapolis, he said, you can knock on a back door whenever your insides start howling and be sure of getting an odd job that will pay you a few nickels.
That's
the people have so
crazy.
Much food they don't know what to do with it. And they don't mind giving some of it away. I could always find a place for a wash up and a shave even when I was living in hobo camps and sleeping in the open.
Look at that. You gave up on the accent.
Yeah. Here they just don't have the jack, I suppose. They hold their food as though they were starving to death and a hobo gets shoved around something awful. They've got a reception here in London at a place called Camberwell, where they give you enough to keep you alive in return for 3 hours work a day. But all you get for breakfast is some porridge that looks and tastes like plaster, and at night it's just a bowl of soup and some bread.
It's a bread soup, yeah. That's, I gotta say, it is crazy that there was a time where anyone would say, you know who's good to homeless people? The United States of America.
Right. Or let's interview a homeless guy about who's nicer to him.
Right, yeah, 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 yeah.
And you took pride in being nice to hobos? Amazing.
And you fucking, your identity was... hobo and you're right. Like I'm yeah. hobo
yeah
yeah hello I am hobo
now it's
professional like professional hobo
yeah now it's like I think it's semi-problematic to make that your profession. You know what I mean? Like, people would be like, you know, if you just have a regular job and wait long enough, you can still become a homeless person. You know?
Yeah.
You just... Now you need to have trauma before you're homeless.
You're one medical bill away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, look at that.
Except, you know, you don't have to pay those.
That's you don't?
True. You don't. No, you just shine them on.
I'm not gonna.
Word out there. Don't pay your medical bills.
It's kind of
an idiot.
It's the same thing with taxes.
Oh,
you're
gonna ruin my credit. Oh no, my credit.
Fuck
hurts.
You.
Yeah. What do I need
just
that for?
Just ignore it. Yeah. No, but doesn't it? It doesn't affect your credit score if you don't pay your health insurance bills.
I don't know. I feel like that's the threat.
Sure, I think it does. I'm pretty sure.
I'm choosing to believe it doesn't.
Okay. Okay.
Because I remember hearing that once.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, you know what? You're probably right about
just
that.
Just remember, this podcast is financial advice.
Yeah. We're like Suze Orman or whatever.
Mm. Is it Suze?
I'm just saying,
Susan?
You can get away with not paying for stuff for quite a while.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've done it, you know, for medical bills, I've done it for Columbia House CDs.
Mm. Why did they still give you the CDs?
They honestly,
I never understood that.
It was crazy to me because they would just give you free DVDs. Like I got like 8 DVDs for a penny is what they said. But then I got a bill for like $90. And I was like, well, that's different. That's different.
Yeah, those are two different prices.
And so when I got the bill, I said, this must be a mistake. I was promised 8 cents. Was how much it cost. And then eventually someone from India called and said they were a collection agency, and I said, well, good luck with Pakistan, and I hung up.
Wow.
And
you
I
said that?
I didn't really say that, but I did pay it.
Yeah,
you did.
Eventually, yeah. I just was like, I feel like if they're calling Indians, you know, they're like telling like fools from India like, hey, collect, like they're serious. You know
you were
I mean?
Like, yeah. If I ever go to India, I'm gonna be so embarrassed.
Yeah, I'm gonna be fucked.
I don't pay.
You're yeah, make you look bad.
They're all gonna, 1 billion Indians will be so
yeah,
mad at me.
They're gonna think I'm part of the Brahmin caste. You know what I mean? It's the lowest caste, I believe. I don't know.
I think that's the high one. No.
Is that the high one?
I think that's the high one.
What's the low one?
Grok,
is this true?
Actually, white genocide is a problem.
Yeah, what was that about?
All right, last story.
Okay.
This one I feel like is actually good context for this episode. Negro to return to Russia.
Watch your language.
Mm-hmm, sorry. Hulda Clark, 15, says she probably will leave this weekend for the Soviet Union to continue her education at a Moscow boarding school. The Negro girl ended speculation that she might not return to Russia because of her family's financial condition. She showed a return trip plane ticket. She said she plans to continue her education in Russia for 10 more years until she becomes a medical doctor. She originally went there at the invitation of Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev. The invitation to a free education was given after Hulda's father, William, met the Russian leader in New York in 1960 and complained about discrimination in American education.
Oh.
At the news conference, Clark said he would like his 14-year-old son, Titus, to follow in Hulda's footsteps. He has 4 other children, all boys. I think this is relevant because a lot of the good things that we did in the 60s and 50s
were
and
to 70s compete with the Russians.
It was mainly to show that we were like better than the Russians. And now that we don't have that to compete against anymore, we're just like,
we don't
give a shit.
That's 100% true. I mean, you know, like, especially in this episode, it's like got some space race stuff mixed with some race stuff.
Yes.
And in both
they
cases,
are actually related.
Wow. You know, we're both racist and space racist. That's the United States. Oh, wow. Well, that is what is. That gives us a proper context for this episode. I think we know how we can talk about this episode from the 60s. And now, before we get into this episode, here's a little bit of the Draper D story for our episode 210. This is a sung to the tune of Cupid by Sam Cooke. Enjoy. This is so stupid.
Great song, though.
It's a great song if he sings it. More obviously if you want to listen to it, and if you don't want to listen to it, fine, but it's at the end, you can hear the full song. Yeah, let's get into it, guys. We're talking about this episode, The Inheritance. Vince, I'm gonna need you to give us some your general thoughts on the episode.
I think this is one of the best episodes that we have watched so far. I mean, it's sort of the first part of a two-parter.
Okay.
I think, you know, I I'm doing the culture writer thing, but it's hard for me not to think of the show in terms of you know, the US in the 60s. It's sort of about the fracturing of American consensus. We like won it all in the 50s and the early 60s, and then somewhere towards the mid 60s we realized that there's like, this actually still kind of sucks. So like the cracks were showing, but this is sort of like the actual fracture between Don's sort of conformist world that was more like the 50s, and now we're sort of leading into the weird 60s where shit started getting weird.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's always fun to see Paul Kinsey get dunked on.
Oh, it's the best.
A lot of that happens.
Yeah, this is a very rare Paul episode. When that happens, I love it. Allison, this is your first episode of Mad Men. What were your thoughts on this episode, you know? In isolation from all the other ones, you know, it's probably hits different. What did you think?
You know, it's interesting. I've always been like, I'm going to watch it one of these days. I will just sit down and watch Mad Men. I know I will. Hasn't happened yet. But having this little preview, it does feel like the show, a kind of show where you really do have to know what's going on in every other episode.
Sure. Yeah.
To me, it was an interesting. I didn't understand anybody's relationships to one another. I didn't know who was important, who wasn't.
What do you think of Don Draper? When you saw him, were you like, ah, there he is? The famous Don Draper.
Yeah, you know, he seemed kind of like the least interesting character to me.
Yeah, that's
in
fair.
In this episode, at least.
Yeah,
in this episode.
He's not doing too much in this episode other than reacting, you know.
Yeah.
And trying to be good husband. What's something that you saw in this episode that you were like, oh, I like that?
I was intrigued by the interracial relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting.
Because you're for that.
That was allowed?
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, because I didn't know what year this even was. So I don't know.
It's the 60s. It's like 60s.
But is it like, but it's before, but that's before, like,
you could do that.
Yeah, like it's.
They were in New York.
They're in New York. I also didn't know where they were.
Okay, so. Let's start from the beginning. This is a show about an advertising agency in New York.
Okay. I knew it was the East Coast because they're making a big deal about going to California.
That's right. That's how you know.
I knew it wasn't like Arizona or something.
That's good.
But I was like, maybe it's Connecticut. Maybe it's Boston.
Could be anything.
It's sort of sometimes in Connecticut, I think. Some of the houses.
So whenever they're visiting.
Actually, where is Betty's family from?
New Jersey, I think, right? Because her mom asked, did you take the turnpike?
Right. Yes.
Unless there's more than one turnpike.
I should have caught that.
How many? Grok, how many turnpikes
Grok,
are there?
Grok, is this true? How many turnpikes are there? Because I know the New Jersey one is the famous one.
Right.
I'm gonna be real with you guys. I don't know what a turnpike is.
I don't know either.
It's a type of fish.
It sounds like a racial slur. I don't like it. It's got a hard K in it.
It's a dance move if you ever watched Jersey Shore. That's what this podcast should be about.
Yes, we'll do a show you've seen at some point. But when you got to the end of the episode, were you like, oh, okay, that was an episode?
So according to
Let her answer my very good question.
Go ahead.
Did I think, okay, that was an episode?
Yeah, did you think that?
I did think that.
All right, good stuff.
Okay, that was an episode, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Vince, what were you reading?
Oh, I was just going to say, according to the Mad Men Wiki, Betty was born in Cape May, New Jersey, where her family summered, and raised in the enclave of Lower Marion, a suburb on Philadelphia main line.
That's where Kobe's from.
Yeah, there you go.
That's where Kobe Bryant is from.
Okay.
All right, look at that.
So she's sort of from New Jersey, and you know, one of those tri-state goblins, but like the wealthy kind.
Yeah, the ones with the wealthy family. My thoughts on this episode, for me, I've never seen Mad Men, and I had a stroke and I've forgotten it all. I liked this episode. I didn't know it was like a sort of part of a pair. You're saying the next one kind of bleeds into it in some way, Vince?
Yes.
Yeah, so my thoughts in general were it was interesting and it left me feeling a little bit incomplete about it. It felt like two episodes and neither of them were finished. That was my feeling about it.
That's fair. I mean, I just think it says a lot in terms of the Mad Men thesis, not necessarily like as an episode of television, but in terms of furthering the Mad Men themes. I mm-hmm. feel like this is very important. I mean, there's the end where Betty is talking to what's the lady down the street's name?
Helen Bishop.
Helen Bishop. She's talking to Helen Bishop, and she says, yeah, like the hard thing now, Helen says, the hard thing now is that no one tells you what to do.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, I know it's a cliche to say that this is like a metaphor for America or whatever, but that is kind of the story of the 60s, which is like they spent the first half of it being like, you can't tell me what to do, Dad. And then the second half was like, oh, shit, what do we do now?
Right,
and then,
yeah. It's about people
and then
like
the 70s was like, oh, I guess we just fuck everything up and kill each other and have
yeah that's true. We did spend the 60s going, you can't tell us what to do, I do what I want. And then as soon as we got our like cultural sovereignty or whatever, everyone was like, what do we do? And everyone's like, more heroin,
yeah, drugs. Jesus.
Drugs for a while, and then Jesus for a while.
Drugs
and
for
then
a while. We're gonna fuck anyone, and then we're gonna be like, well, maybe we shouldn't fuck those people. And then we're gonna find Jesus,
and then eventually we're gonna be like, you know what I like to do? Consume. Nummy, nummy, yeah. Nummy.
Yeah, you know what made us great? Consumption.
I love to consume. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yum, yum, yum.
I liked the parallels in this episode between what's happening with Betty and Dawn and what's happening with Betty and Glenn, who is the little boy from across the street.
Any Glenn episode? I know, like, yeah. I guess people,
I didn't understand that at all.
So I guess people, I guess, like, when Mad Men was originally airing, people did not like Glenn, which is funny to me because, like,
totally
to me, like,
it.
Any Glenn episode to me is like, fuck yes,
yeah,
Glenn is here.
Allison, I mean, your thoughts on what the hell was that about is actually the thoughts of everyone who watched the show.
I mean, the show is such like a focused treatise on American society, and it's very like on the nose in the way that, you know, in the way that The Wire is on the nose and focused in its themes and its commentary, which is good. But I also like when you just have like a magical cat character, and mm-hmm. that's Glenn. He's just a fucking wild card, and I always want that somewhere in my fiction.
He shows up I do think he's sort of this because he's written in this way and he's acted in this way where you're not sure if she's talking to a real person. Like,
I was kind of wondering that. Yes. I was like, is this a figment of her imagination?
He does. She just does not know what to make of this kid, and that's what's great.
Right. He seems like an imaginary boy, and but he is real, but he,
I think she's kind of like, this kid is so weird That I can tell him anything because no one's gonna believe anything that he says.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's like a closed book. Like it's like talking to a therapist because yes. Like what is he gonna say to anyone else? People are gonna be like,
her actual therapist is diming her out to Dawn.
Right.
This kid is like, this kid actually cares about me.
Yeah.
Why did they have sexual tension?
Okay, so that's a great question. Because
Glenn wants to fuck her.
Because Glenn. And,
I mean, he's 12 or, I don't know, 11.
What is that saying about America?
Yeah. What does that say about America?
I think it's saying
America,
that Betty's hot.
Yeah.
I think it's saying, like, he has a neighbor that's obviously very hot. And he's
no,
like,
but
okay.
The weird thing about it and what the reason you're not wrong where you're like, this feels weird is because it's not abnormal for a, 11-year-old boy to think that, January Jones is hot. Like she's objectively pretty. What's weird is the way that Betty acts around him, kind of like she's not sexually attracted to him, but like immediately he becomes sort of like her other husband in a way. Like
I think the explanation there is that like she is not getting the sexual attention from Dawn that she wants, and when she tries to get it from other adult men it immediately turns like dangerous,
right?
Whereas like Glenn is a safe place to get that sort of sexual attention that she wants, and she knows that there's not as much like potential consequences of it.
Right. I also think that for her this little boy is kind of like is sort of Dawn. It is her husband, and right now,
because he's mysterious. You're like, where the fuck did this kid come from?
Right, but like right now, he's Dawn is he's living in a hotel. They're having a little separation. There's a little bit of issues going on, and Dawn ends up helping her out with this stroke situation that her father's in. And still,
Glenn wishes she'd help him out with a stroke
situation. Yeah, give me a little stroke situation. And yet she still like kicks him out and says like, no, even though you helped me out, I'm still not interested in reconciling
with
you.
Yeah, you can't. Oh, Dawn, I thought you were talking about Glenn. Yeah,
and both, exactly. So then fucking Glenn comes over and he's got his wants and needs. I want to, take you away on my spaceship. We go fly.
Eat Skittles out your pussy.
Yeah, okay, eat Skittles out your pussy. And then she immediately calls his mom and he's like, I hate you. And she's like, I know. This is what happens with these little boys in my life, like my husband and this random latchkey kid. Mm-hmm. And I kind of I like that she's, there's that parallel between the two of them. That's a lot of fun. And of course, I like in this episode all the Paul Kinsey stuff. I like that he is, he's a little cowardly liberal who is
he's a fuck boy. He's proto fuck boy. He's the original fuck
boy. He's the OG fuck boy.
Is this the one in the interracial relationship?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
He's who really loves having his girlfriend visit him at the office so that he can brag about having a black girlfriend to the elevator operator who is also black. And it's like but then, when he's challenged to like do something for the cause. Right. He's just like, but I'm supposed to go on a plane ride to LA for a bit. So can we do a little justice delayed, but without the justice denied?
Yeah.
I think that's fair to
not want to get shot by drunken Mississippi sheriffs.
Totally fair. And it was also fair for him to be like, I really want to go on this trip. I get that. But it is very funny how it all turns out at the end of this episode.
But I like that he just gets, he starts out the episode getting shit on and he just continues to get shit on
in
increasingly larger amounts throughout the episode.
The first time we see him in this episode, they're having a meeting because they know there's this convention that's happening in LA. It's like an aerospace convention, and they're going to go there and try to get some fucking advertising contracts. And it's going
to
be
every engineer, scientist in general be there trying to figure out how to put on the man, trying to figure out how to put a man on the moon or blow up Moscow, whichever one costs more.
Right. it's a
perfect line.
It's a great line, and it's going to be Pete Campbell and Paul who are supposed to be going. And I love this little exchange when Don shuts up Paul. It's really good. Here it is.
Sell, but you're also there to listen. Every scientist, engineer, and general is trying to figure out a way to put a man on the moon or blow up Moscow, whichever one costs more. We have to explain to them how we can help them spend that money.
Well, it certainly would behoove us to find out.
Campbell, you do the talking. Kinsey, you do the listening.
I love it because he's just like, he uses the word behoove, and he's like, no.
Yeah, immediately he's just like, I don't know where you're going with us, but I don't care.
Yeah, Paul is like, he's just so fucking pretentious. He's such like a, he's
is
such...
He?
Yeah, yes. He's a weeb. Like, his whole thing is like,
well, does that mean he likes anime?
Bert Cooper is the weeb.
Yes, okay, fair enough. But I think they're both weebs.
Paul's more of a fuckboy, more of a classic fuckboy. Okay. I think he's like a, he fancies himself a bit of a beat poet kind of guy.
I did not get that vibe at all.
Well, who's going to be more right, Allison? We're
I'm
right.
Saying from this episode.
Yeah.
I did not get the vibe. Well, I liked him. I was like, oh, he's a more interesting character to me than the other ones.
Yeah. No.
You are fuckboy curious. That is your that is
and
your
maybe
female...
this is why this explains a lot about why my dating life is so awful.
That was your extra X chromosome.
I was like, the show should be about this guy.
He seems sensitive.
What are we doing?
I love that. But yeah, no, he's, you know, he shows up what's interesting about his character when you see it in action throughout the series is that you do see the intentions that he has are good, but he plays this very like specific type of guy who's like nowadays we see as like a fuckboy or even just like kind of like a virtue signaling liberal type of guy. And with him, it's not that he's wrong. I mean, you know, he's not wrong. He's just annoying. And everyone around him is...
He's performative.
Yes,
he's performative. He's doing the right things like completely out of narcissism.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, he acts like he's about it, but when push comes to shove, he's not really about it.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you do have to give credit where credit is due because everyone who's annoyed with him is also racist. So,
are they doing?
Right. Yeah. So they are objectively worse, a lot of them. At least he's trying, but it's, you know, it's hard to not look at this from our modern vantage point and go like, yeah, but he's trying because he wants to get the clout, you know?
I mean, this is an easy parallel where Don is like the appeal of Trump and Paul Kinsey is like the reason that that those kind of people are popular, because it's like, I wish someone would just tell this to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And then someone does and it's like he's like one of the worst guys ever. But,
right.
You know, you wanted to hear him. You want to hear someone say shut up.
Yeah.
You think Paul would wear like one of those pink pussy hats today?
100%.
Probably has Kente cloth at his house.
100%. This dude was like during like 2020, he was like trying to, he was going places like, where can I wash a black man's feet? You know, like, and everyone was like, don't be weird.
Yeah.
Just don't be weird.
You're making me uncomfortable.
No, I'm glad you're here. Stop being weird. And he's just wearing a fucking kente cloth. But yeah, so, I mean, it's a great, his storyline is so great because he very much wants to go to LA for this trip. And I don't blame him at all. And then his girlfriend shows up and we find out that he has not yet said anything to his girlfriend about this. And so she questions him about it. And I have that clip.
I was going to tell you at lunch.
Why are you going to Los Angeles?
It just came up. The election's not for months. We can register voters in October.
It has nothing to do with the election. You know that.
If you don't mind, I'd rather face Mississippi and those people screaming at me and maybe getting shot after I go to California.
Are you scared?
Don't pretend like it's not scary. You can always get another job at a grocery store. I can't just walk into an ad agency.
Well, I'm going. I guess I'll just hop in Billy Kaplan's bus with 10 strangers.
Why can't it wait?
I love the threat of, I guess I'll just go into Billy Kaplan's bus with 10 strangers. Who's Billy Kaplan? Do you have any information on if that's a reference to someone specific?
Or? I was just looking that up. I forget all of the various Freedom Riders. There's a Marvel character named Billy Kaplan, which is really fucking up my search results.
God damn it. Fucking Marvel is ruined. Grok, is this true? Is Billy Kaplan true? White genocide happens. I love that she's, you know, she's like, well, I'm going anyways. And in that scene, it's so funny because he keeps looking over at Hollis, the elevator operator, and just being like, don't embarrass me in front of him. I need him to think I'm cool and with it and hip.
He's going to invite me to the jazz club. Stop it.
Yeah. It's really great. But yeah, so, you know, she is going to go do freedom rides with Adam, and he... You know, he makes a good point, which is like, this is my job and kind of have to go. But also, he wants to go, and he also refuses to tell her what the convention is for. Like, he says, yeah. It's a secret.
I can't tell you.
I can't talk about it. And it's like, it's because the answer to that is it's a bunch of military contractors who are, it's like essentially.
I'm figuring out how to do imperialism. I'm going somewhere to help them do imperialism.
Yeah. But
so I can't register black voters this
yeah,
weekend.
Yeah. It's so funny. And you think he's going to go, but then after, you know, Dawn's storyline, which we'll get into in a second. Don decides that he wants to go to LA instead, and apparently they can't all three of them go, so it's going to be Pete and Don. And so Joan is the one who has to tell Paul that he is disinvited, and it's so funny the way that it just goes from one scene to the other here, where Paul is like, he goes from being like begging essentially, like, why can't we all go together, to pretending as if it is through his magnanimity that he has decided that, you know what, this is more important than me going to some convention. It is so,
and you know what,
yeah,
call me crazy. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
No, yes.
Well, the part that you missed in this is that Paul and Joan used to hook up.
And
one of Joan's favorite things is just like dunking on Paul.
Yes.
And so so she's being very like coy about it, but you can tell that she is fucking thrilled to be the one that gets to deliver the news that Paul can't go to California.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. She loves that. And here's that scene.
No, it's just he and Mr. Campbell going.
What? He can't do that.
I'm sure it must be disappointing. I'll need your tickets and your badges.
Hey, Sheila, it's me. I know that. And I want you to know I've thought about it. I'm going to stand there arm in arm with you and make a stand. It's not just about you and me. I love you too, baby.
I love that. It's not just about you and me. It's bigger than us. It's bigger than some convention I really wanted to go to. It's bigger than my job, which I'm so afraid of losing. It's bigger than politics, you know. It's bigger than money. It's about you thinking that I'm doing this on my own. That's what it's about.
Yeah. Well, the other like wrinkle is that, you know, Joan just lost her job duty. Like she almost had like a real job at the ad agency,
right? A non-secretarial position,
non-secretary, and then they like sort of replaced her, even though she was clearly very good at it. But like the one, and so like she was never in the running to get to go to California, even though she would be much better at that than either of those two dorks.
Yeah.
Sorry, is this the woman in the beginning, the blonde one?
No, the redhead.
Oh, the redhead.
Yeah, this is the redhead.
The one who gets to tell him.
Yeah, who gets to tell Paul that like he's not going to California. The one with the, I'm just going to say it, she's got really big cheese. She got.
I didn't notice that.
Oh, neither did I.
Who did you mean?
It's other people who notice that kind of stuff. I honestly find that gauche. Is gauche the word? She's enjoying kind of like this moment of like getting to cut Paul down to size, which is It's really fun and enjoyable. And my favorite thing is at the end of his storyline, he is in the bus and he is talking about how his job as advertisement agent is a Marxist. And here's that scene.
Advertising, if anything, helps bring on change. The market, and I'm talking in a purely Marxist sense, dictates that we must include everyone. Consumer has no color.
It's so funny that he's in this bus, white man splaining racial equality under capitalism. It's so funny. I love.
I mean, that's literally what we're doing now.
That's what we're doing.
It's very, well, listen, yeah, but an interesting parallel.
Listen, what we do though is, I know I'm a piece of shit. You know, and it's different when you think you're good versus when you know you're
Oh, no. I meant like capitalism is still doing that.
Oh, I thought you meant I was a piece of shit.
Yeah. No, I mean that too, but I mean like... No.
Yeah,
you know, no, like how Sephora or whatever, like a makeup company is like,
yes,
hey, we believe that we get feminism, so men should wear makeup too.
Yes.
Instead of like, you should stop wearing makeup.
100%. That,
you know?
That is exactly right. And that's like what is interesting about Paul's character. I feel like he would have thrived like if he was in a modern advertisement agency.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Imagine how well he would be doing his yeah. shit. He would be like trying to slap like Black Lives Matter fists onto like Pepsi and stuff like that. Like, he would have been
the
guy.
He would have come up with that Kendall Jenner ad where she
where she gives the riot police a Pepsi.
Absolutely.
And everyone dances. Yeah, no, that is
100%.
That is him to a T. Brent? Is that Brent?
Yeah, it sure is.
Wow, what are you doing here?
Well, as you guys know, advertising brings change. And
it does.
So from like a Marxist perspective, we have to stop for ads.
Oh, okay. My God. Well, you make a really good point. We have a few ads to sell you right now. So please, everyone, stick around. Listen to these ads. Embrace change. And we will be right back. And we're back. It's Mad Yourself a Man. We're talking with Allison Stevenson. How you doing, Allison?
I'm good.
Okay, good. Good, good. We're all good here. Everyone's good. And we're talking about a good show. That's right. We're talking about Mad Men. And so the next storyline, real quick, is what's happening with Pete and his wife. Mm-hmm. This is I feel like there's a lot of what's going on with Pete, his wife, his family is sort of paralleling what's going on with Betty's family. Like, both of them are dealing with sort of inheritance issues, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my take on what's happening here is that Pete and Don have spent their entire lives like trying to fake their way into the the power structure, fake their way into being at the table of authority figures. And then like through their parents' decline, they're realizing like, oh, these like authority figures that we have been trying to become have been sort of full of shit and or like sad this entire time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And now, you know, they're coming to a place where like, oh shit, no one's telling me what to do
right.
anymore. And all the rules that I thought were the things that were supposed to govern my behavior
right.
sort of no longer apply, or we're seeing like that they were all sort of a facade this entire time.
Yeah, the way like death and sickness really changes. I mean, it changes what they thought the rules are. You know, with Pete, it's the death of his dad, and they're dealing with his estate and realizing, like, oh, they never had, they don't have any money at all.
All this appearance of wealth was fake the entire time. Whereas, and then with Betty, sorry, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Yeah, and Betty's got a father who just had a stroke, and now he's, like, grabbing on her titty and thinking it's his dead wife and stuff, and she's just like, oh, man, shit's fucked up right now. You know, what am I supposed to do? And yeah, Pete's story is just got, you know, some stuff going on. He's in bed with his wife, and his wife is complaining about the fact that they're not, you know, she's still not pregnant. They're trying to have a baby, and she brings up adoption, and he is like, you know, no, we can't do that. It's against the, you know, the rules.
I don't want to have my own kids, let alone somebody else's.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, I think for him, it's definitely that. He's like, I don't want to have any kids at all. Now you're telling me I got to go grab one off of, like, the fucking
the discount rack.
Yeah. The bargain bin kid. She says something like, we're not related by blood and you love me. And I'm like, Pete is so, like, blue-blooded that he might actually love her less for not being blood-related. like, the fact that she's not, like, a distant cousin for him is probably a problem. But
the way she delivered that line, I was like, oh, I would give her anything that she wants.
I know. What's the name of the actress?
Allison Brie.
Mm. I like Allison Brie. I bet we could be friends. I think she would think I'm funny. Anyways, Pete talks to his brother. They're talking about the estate. They're making jokes about killing their own mother.
It's funny how much more likable Pete gets when his family's around.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually going to ask this. Is he supposed to be a likable character?
No, he's an utter piece of shit. Okay. But then when he's around his family, you're like, oh, I kind of like this guy. I like that he jokes with his brother, and I like the way he tells off his cunt of a mom. And
yeah.
And it's kind of nice.
It is nice. And like, he you know, is going over to his mom's house, and they're signing documents and stuff. And he had just told his brother, like, they were considering adopting. And his brother says, some people do that. Or no, he says, people do that. Yeah. And he goes, they do. Which is like, I love the not saying anything. Like, no one's actually talking, because that is like, that's part of their culture, is to not express.
Yeah.
Then as soon as he gets to his mom's house, his mother's like, I'm going to write you out of the will if you adopt the child. It's the perfect opportunity for him to be like, oh, the will, you say. Mm. How much money do you think we have? And out of spite, he fucking, you know, makes his brother tell her that they don't have any money. And she's...
Understandably. I was wanting him to give it to her with both barrels right there.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, tell her.
And then stab her to death. Fucking bitch. You know what I mean? And yeah, so that's what happens with Pete in this episode. And now the most important storyline, we're talking about the stroke.
I have some very mixed feelings about this whole story. I mean, I love this storyline from a dramatic standpoint.
Okay.
I also love Betty's stepmom. Like,
oh yeah,
we can talk to Allison on the same page here, because this is sort of like the first time we're meeting Betty's stepmom too.
And she seemed nice.
She does, but she also is like the perfect second wife that you're sort of annoyed by, like partly for unfair reasons and partly for fair reasons. Like, you can tell she's obnoxious, but like there's nothing that she does that is,
she's not particularly bad.
She doesn't do anything wrong, but she is kind of annoying at the same time.
She's not mommy.
Mommy.
That's
she's
the just thing.
Like, and she's also like a little trashy compared to the rest of them. Like, you can tell, like, she's, I don't know. She's so, like, she's kind of like she's kind of slutty in a like vague way. That
she's
like,
slutty?
I mean, in the context of being a mainline Philadelphia WASP in 1962.
Because she was showing too much forearm.
Yeah, I mean, she's fucking... just like she's talking about her under things as Betty says, she does say that.
She's uncouth.
She's a little uncouth compared to them.
And she's doing small talk, which is really funny because at one point Betty and her brother are sitting and they say, "Dad used to fine us for small talk."
Yeah. Which is weird because it's like, isn't that all you people do? Like, what does not small talk look like to you?
Yeah. I have no idea what they think small talk is.
We do really small talk in this family.
Yeah. I like birds.
We only talk about art and newspaper.
Yeah, just I love how small talk can be. I'm hungry.
I love the stepmom. The brother, I feel like, is wildly miscast just on a physical level.
I think he's great.
I like the actor, but you know, you got like slender, long, lanky Betty, and then the dad is like very
big,
like,
hulking
super,
guy,
super long armed, like rangy guy, and then you got this little troll jockey brother.
He does look like they're
not from the same family.
He does look like he rides a horse.
Yeah,
maybe he takes after his mother.
That's what I think it is, and I think that is what I enjoy about this like casting choice is the fact that they were like, you know, we're just going to assume that he takes after his mother and that, you know, it's unfortunate because he's probably been shit on his whole life for being this, like, you know, little boy, you know. Yeah. And you know, you can see he's bitter. You can see he's like talking about like, oh, because New York is so great. And, you know, he doesn't even know the name of the like the vase that like
right
Betty is looking for the jardiniere and stuff. Like and the funniest part is when he enters that room, he enters through a window. She's like, "Where were you?" And he's like, "The treehouse." I was like, "This motherfucker spent a lot of time."
He literally
in the
lives house. In a tree. Yeah. That's how much of a little gnome he is.
You look like a Keebler elf.
So I guess the other aspect of this is like dramatically, I love the stroke and like what it says to the other characters, and Betty's sort of like, okay, so I'm going to live my whole life the right way. And then what? I'm just going to eventually like lose my mind and start trying to fuck my kids. So on that aspect, I really like it, but I also,
Vince loves it when you try to fuck your kids. Disgusting man.
But I have a longstanding thing about the way fiction deals with like dementia.
Illness? Oh,
like,
dementia. Yeah.
It never looks the way real dementia does in my experience, at least.
Okay.
It's always this kind of thing where it's like, oh, they seem totally with it 1 minute and then the next minute, like they're thinking their daughter is a prostitute or something. Like, I don't know. I've never witnessed that kind of...
What have you witnessed?
Dimension. Well, I mean, look at Joe Biden. It's sort of like this weird slow decline where like it's not, he didn't go from being like totally sharp to he wasn't going back and forth between
there wasn't
sharp.
Enough mumbling.
No, yeah, he just like, it's like this sort of, like he starts getting a little more mumbly. He starts rambling on a little more. He gets like a little more confused. Like it's sort of like this gradual sort of decline. Whereas like in fiction, it's always like this jarring sort of back and forth where he's talking to you like all spry and articulate. And the next second he is confused. He's holding his fork backwards. It's like, I don't know. I've never seen that kind of dementia.
But is it dementia?
Personally.
Is that?
He says he's had a stroke, so it's a little different, but yeah.
It's hard to tell. It seems like he's in like he's just had a stroke and then
not the first one
and then the way Betty's nanny talks about it, the doctors say it's just gonna get worse and worse. So I'm like, so it must be a mix. He must have like some dementia going on and he's got some stroke shit going on. I mean, I don't know. You never hear someone say, you know, oh, you're just going to keep having strokes, you know, unless you have, I think, a very specific issue. At least I've never heard that. I don't really know what's going on with him. I do know that what I enjoy about his brain damage and about like the narrative use of it is how you can do like exposition with it.
I think it's very great narratively. It's just not especially realistic in my experience.
Yeah, I love him just shouting out, like, my favorite line from this is just in the middle of them doing a puzzle together. He just yells at him about not knowing who he is.
That part I felt like was accurate, like the way it sort of like slowly shifts into like a weird emotion. Yes. That part I felt was very realistic.
Yeah, I have that here.
Can't say the same about him.
Don's helping.
Who knows what he does, why he does it. I know more about the kid who fixes my damn car.
Dad, you're hurting Don's feelings.
Dinner time.
What's going on?
He has no people. You can't trust a person like that.
Daddy.
And he's not wrong.
Yeah, that's... no, he's not wrong. And that part also did feel Joe Biden-y, where he sort of like goes from like...
Yeah. Hey, listen up, Jack.
Yeah, like sort of...
I don't even know who this guy is.
Like doing jokes that is sort of work, and then it sort of slips into something mean-spirited.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
And yeah, I'd love just so they you know, they go over to the house and they're doing puzzles with him and cards and stuff. They have some dinner. He tries to fuck his own daughter because he thinks it's his dead wife. That's, you know, it's not because he's weird. It's because he's confused.
Yeah.
And then we meet.
I thought I was grabbing my wife's tit at the table.
Right. Exactly. I thought I was doing something normal, like a sexually assaulting my own betrothed. But yeah, then.
But
you know,
what if that's not what happened?
Oh shit! What do you think happened? You think
he's
pretending?
How waspy are they?
What if it was like stroke mode? Like
yes,
I can't fight my urges as easily, and I've always wanted to fuck my dog. What if he's Trump and not Biden?
Whoa.
Or what if he is the Menendez dad, and he's just reverting to what he used to do when she was a kid?
I don't feel like Betty was molested, and I say that.
I don't either, but I feel like that's a potential read if you wanted to make it.
Grok, was Betty molested? Sorry. But yeah, no, I mean, we don't know exactly what's going on. I think we're meant to assume that he thought it was his dead wife. But I love that she goes, like, both her and her brother are doing a lot of like age regression. They go into the house and they're immediately like, you know, his little elf ass is climbing trees, hiding out from mommy and daddy, you know. And then, like, you know, fucking Betty is, you know, goes to her bedroom and sees her like nanny, like the lady who probably raised her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's like, you know, do I have to wash your mouth out with soap? And she's like, sorry, mama. And, you know, she's just like crying on her shoulder. And it's very cute because it's like you realize that like Betty doesn't have role models, like older role models or people who like taught her. She just has like domestics. She was raised by domestics. And that's a very sad type of character to have to deal with the cultural changes in the 60s, because it's like that is someone who was not raised to be in any way self-reliant. And, you know, her breaking up with her husband or separating, you know, with her husband is really like, oh boy, like it's a lot like scarier because she doesn't know what to do.
Right. And it's also the civil rights movement is basically like, oh, you mean to tell me my second mommy didn't actually love me like daughter? Like
yeah,
a daughter?
Exactly. And it's, yeah, it's interesting. Meanwhile, you know, Dawn is spending this whole episode just like being a cuck. No, just trying to like be a good husband, trying to be there for her, trying to show her that like, hey, you know, when you need me, you know, chips are down. Dad's had a couple of strokes. I'm there for you. And I want to be, he wants to be back, you know, but she sleeps with him. She makes him sleep on the floor and then fucks him on the floor, which I thought was beautiful. I enjoy that. Very sexy. But then, you know, he thinks like, oh, everything's good. You know, maybe I can go back with the kids now. And he, mm-hmm. and she like, he tells him like, nah, that ain't happening. And I have that scene when Betty says that she thinks that Dawn should leave.
I'll go get the kids.
Francine promised them the pool tomorrow. Carlo will bring them home later.
I'm gonna take a shower.
Don.
What?
I think you should leave.
You sure about that?
Yes.
I just don't want to go home.
Why?
What's waiting for me at home is really bad.
That's your reason.
I don't know. When I get home, there's something I'm worried about my life.
Nothing's changed.
I don't know.
We were just pretending.
I don't know. Carmelo said your face looks like a clock.
So...
What?
Huh?
What was that from?
That's from I Think You Should Leave.
I don't remember the Carmelo line.
That's the same sketch.
Oh. Is...
It's the zip line sketch.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Anyways, she says, I think you should leave, and then I play the I Think You Should Leave sketch. Come on.
Okay.
So
right,
straightforward.
Right.
Sorry. I missed that.
Oh, God. Anyways, she says, we're just pretending, you know, and he says, well, Carmela said, your face looks like a clock. And so
she said, we were only pretending. And Don was like, but my whole life is pretending. And
right.
I thought you said I'm all right, Spider.
I thought you said you were all right, Spider. Yeah, no, it is like, it's very clear that like for Don, he's like, well, what is marriage and or relationships if not pretending that everything is all right in front of other people?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to me that you say that she's like kind of a weaker character,
mm-hmm.
you know, not self-reliant, because I read her this whole episode as being a very...
Yeah.
Uniquely independent woman for that time period.
Yes.
She's turning into that.
Yes. That's what's happening now with her character, especially the fact that she is sticking to her guns about like him not, because you would expect, and I think Dawn expected her to like, oh shit, adversary? That's the word.
Adversity.
Shut the fuck up. adversity? Adversary, I'm gonna run back to my husband, and she's like, nah, where this is just to put on a show for them, this is all pretend, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, you're not wrong, Allison, like she is a stronger character than that. She is someone who is, she's not a weak character, but she is, you know, looking at the show as a whole and like her character as a whole, what you're seeing is like some growth, but
you're looking at her character as a whole. Wow.
No,
pretty
I don't look at
misogynist.
Women as holes. I want to rephrase.
She's
that.
Tits. She's not a hole.
She, yeah,
she's
first
tits.
Of all, she's tits. And it depends on what kind of man you are.
She's the stuff around the hole.
She's the stuff around the hole. She's the heart of the hole.
Oh wait, no, she's not tits. The other one's tits. Sorry.
That's right.
They both have tits.
Okay, she can be a hole.
She's both tits and hole, but also heart is what I'm saying. And I think I love all women like that.
I like both bands. I celebrate their whole catalog.
100%. I love hole. I love heart. But yeah, so it's like, it's an interesting, you know, character choice. And you kind of like see the worry that she has about what the future holds once we get to the Glenn part. So once she comes home and all of a sudden Glenn is hiding out in a little like playhouse, just like her weird
a Wendy house, apparently it's called.
Yeah, a Wendy house. Just, you know, very similar to her weird little
Wendy's neighborhood kids.
Oh,
that's where they stay.
just like our little little goblin brother. What?
Also, real quick, my assumption is that Dawn has been like sleeping with a bunch of people,
yes.
And that's why they're separating.
Yes, that is correct. You got that
okay.
right. Yeah,
that was
he's a little assumption. He's a little playboy. He's he likes to fuck, and that is apparently a problem for people like Betty. and yeah, so like she sees Glenn. And she has the whole scene, you know, scenes with him in which he's like being like very sweet and also very weird. And also, what's the sexual tension? Isn't he a little boy? What is happening? Why is this so strange? I have what happens with that right here.
I came to rescue you. Did you bring your cape? I'm not joking. We can go anywhere. I have money.
A few moments later.
Glenn, you have to go home. Let's go. Your father's on his way. I hate you.
Apologize right this minute.
No, it's true. I hate you.
I know.
Yeah, so she's like, I hate you. Or he's like, I hate you. And I feel like she's immediately just, yeah, so does every man in my life, you know, like, and for her, immediately after that, you know, Helen Bishop, Glenn's mom, comes back and they have this conversation where at first it seems very adversarial. That's the correct word. And they, you know, they're kind of confronting each other for the first time since they had like a little blow up over Glenn earlier, because he was being weird to her and she was also kind of being weird to him. Then they have this conversation where, you know, Betty is like, hey, you know, maybe you should be a better mom. And Helen takes that and doesn't like throw it back at her. And she's like, damn, you're right. I fucking suck. And then Betty immediately goes like, you know, me and my husband are separating too. And you see that they're both sitting there and they're both scared about like what, now that it's like on them, you know, what could happen. Like Betty doesn't want to be like Helen, a single mom who is like going from boyfriend to boyfriend and is like, you know, making fucking, passing out pamphlets in Times Square about whatever. She wants to be a good mom. But she also is afraid because she doesn't know how to do it without a man. And we're going to see what happens with that as the show goes on.
Mm. Any predictions, Allison?
Yeah, what do you think happens? Yeah.
She goes back to Dawn?
Sort of, but maybe not. We don't know, because we don't do spoilers here at the Madman Show. Before we get out of here, first things first, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, I think I would give this episode a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode a letter grade?
Yeah, it's tough to judge. Like I said, I think it's one of the best episodes we've talked about so far, and yet it's also incomplete. And therefore, I feel very comfortable giving this the solidest of B+.
That's crazy. Allison, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
You know, this is the only thing I know about Mad Men is this episode now.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot different than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
It was slower than I thought it would be.
Yeah, slow.
But honestly, talking about it, I think, made me like it more than when I was actively watching it.
Mm. That helps.
That's why people listen to the show.
Yeah, for people who don't like the show.
They hate the show. They don't like watching it, but they want to hear people talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I might throw a B+ on there.
Oh my God.
Wow. I don't know if this has ever happened before.
This has never happened.
Really?
We're at B+, B+, B+.
That means officially it is a B+ episode of Mad Men and an A++++++++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Allison Stevenson, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking Mad Men with us.
My pleasure.
Where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Just About Glad.
At Just About Glad, yep. On Instagram.
Yeah.
Find
That's
her.
About it.
Mm-hmm. What street do you live? No, I'm kidding. no, but we will put your Instagram handle in the show notes. So please, everyone, follow Allison. Do it now. And Allison, again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/podcast. $8 tier gets you a show note. That's right. You got a prep school name and something else. Vince, we have three names this week. Vince, the first one is Laura Rose.
Laura Rose, by any other name, would still sound as sweet to me. We're calling her Gypsy.
Gypsy Rose, killing her parents. Killing your parents.
Getting her boyfriend to kill her
parents. That's right. Shout out to Gypsy Rose. You're killing your parents with kindness. Next is Sam Becker.
I'm going to call this guy Lasagna.
Oh.
Because you know what you put on lasagna? A nice bechamel sauce. Well, it's actually a bechamel, but... I like it.
Lasagna. Oh, yeah. Do you hate Mondays? So does Garfield. Lasagna. A second lasagna has hit the World Trade Center. I don't know, man. We're having fun. And
Splat.
And last but not least, another returning champion, a happy customer, Andrew Hall is back, and he wants a name.
Andy Hall. We call this guy Hot Dog. I don't know what I called him the first time.
I hope it wasn't a hot dog. Why did you call him a
hot dog down this hall?
Oh, a hot dog down the hallway. You know?
Down this hall, comma, way.
Hot diggity dog. Thank you, Andrew Hall. That is your shout outs. We want more and you want more, so go ahead, $8 tier, join it and get a shout out, get a prep school name. patreon.com/frogcast, frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
2:10, Gene had a stroke. Says Dawn has no people. Then he gives Betty's tin a squeeze. 2:10, Pete's gonna fly. Which is how his dad died. Uses Peggy for their hubby. Now Glenn Bishop has run away cause he's in distress. Both Pete and Betty dealing with their inheritance. Paul brings back his black girlfriend into the office. Wants them to know this. So, 2:10, Paul was supposed to go south to fight Jim Crow. But he's got a business trip, firstly, so delay for me. 2:10, the freedom rides, and Paul is worried he'll die. But then Don decides to replace him. To see her dad, Gene. He thought that maybe he and her were reconciling. But Betty kicks him out again, so he talks to Joan. Takes LA away from Paul. So, 2:10, Glenn runs away. Tells Betty he's gonna save her.
Sam Cooke, flap, 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 flap. I got murked when I got a sex worker who took me home and then stole something from my wallet, I thought. So I chased her and then I got fucking shot. Yeah, that's a sad ending to that story. Sam Cooke was great, but he did get shot to death by a sex worker that he was chasing naked. Oh, no. You know what? I think it was the hotel or motel manager who shot him. Either way, I don't know if she actually did steal something from his wallet. But either way.
Ow. All right.
Oh.
Okay, Allison,
Is this, oh, is this like instead of clapping?
Yeah, just start.
Just make noises?
Just start coming. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, yeah.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.